This is Castle One. Race officer speaking.
Lay on head on boundary up ahead, 35 seconds out.
A bit lower and faster here.
Ho ho ho! That's a good one, Jimmy.
Still gaining on the lay line there.
Welcome back, podcast fans. Thank you for joining us. Another month, another two-part podcast from Inside Our Sport. And this month, we're looking forward to the 37th America's Cup as we go behind closed doors with one of our sport's most successful modern era cup teams. Recorded in Barcelona, the home of the next cup, it's a bumper edition. Before all of that, many, many thanks to all of you that got in touch after last month's chat with Dean Barker. It wasn't a surprise to hear that many of you had been waiting for Dean to come on the pod, and it was great to sit down with him. So to all of you that got in touch, a big thanks. It's great to know you're enjoying the pod. And I have to quickly say a massive thanks to the legend that is Carlo Berlenghi. Carlo often helps us out with photographs to promote the podcast. And last month, well, he really stepped up. If somehow you're not familiar with Carlo's work, check him out online. His photographs of Dean were superb. Carlo, well, you're a legend. Thank you. To those of you that took the time to head over to buy me a coffee, well, an extra special thanks. Some of you have been very generous, so thank you again. It's great to know that you value the hard work. If you haven't done so and you listen to us every month, then if you like what we do, please do head over to buymeacoffee.com/sailingpodcast. Leave us a message and buy us a coffee or two. So this month's pod, well, this time next month, it'll be just 500 days until the first match of the AC 37 Cup. That may be a long time to you and I, but to an America's Cup team, it's a heartbeat. So with that in mind, we jumped on a plane to Barcelona to go and visit one of the most successful cup teams of the modern era. They're the first team to be fully set up and sailing in the host city, but interestingly, they didn't take part in the previous cup in Auckland. In fact, they haven't sailed a cup match since 2010 when they lost the Deed of Gift match to American team BMW Oracle Racing. I am, of course, talking about the mighty Swiss Cup outfit previously known as Alinghi, relaunched for this campaign as Alinghi Red Bull Racing after a fascinating tie-in with the sporting powerhouse from Austria. Well, more of that shortly. For those that don't know, Alinghi formed just after Team New Zealand successfully defended the cup in Auckland in 2000. The brainchild of Swiss entrepreneur Ernesto Bertarelli, the newly formed Alinghi team pulled a massive coup by luring a host of the successful Kiwis away from Team New Zealand. They went on to win the very next cup in 2003 in Auckland, right in front of an incredulous New Zealand fan base. In fact, in the now 172 years of cup history, excluding the first ever race, Alinghi are the only ever team to have won it at the first attempt. They also happen to be the only European team to have ever won it, which, hailing from the landlocked nation of Switzerland, is quite an achievement. If you're new to the podcast or the history of the Cup, I'd recommend listening to Russell Coutts and also Brad Butterworth's editions of the pod. They were both key members of that Team New Zealand setup that moved to Alinghi for the 2003 Cup. They both reveal what that was like, stealing the cup away from Auckland in front of the New Zealand fans. It was all pretty full on. In fact, Brad makes an appearance this month. He's still involved in a senior role with Alinghi Red Bull Racing, so we talk to Brad later in part two, along with the team's principal naval architect, Adolfo Caru, from the design office of America's Cup design regulars, Boateng Partners. And we talked to a member of the sailing team that has returned after winning the cup in 2003, Yves Dittray. That's all coming up in part two, but in part one, we kick things off with the principal helm, Arno Sarafagas, sailing his first cup campaign, but no stranger to the fast-moving world of foiling yachts. And to Pierre-Yves Jorin, general manager in charge of the sports team, and longtime team manager for Alinghi. I hope you enjoy the time I spent with America's Cup team Alinghi Red Bull Racing.
The boat is big, it's noisy. I remember the first time we actually got to takeoff speed, suddenly there is a moment of silence. You feel like it's a dinghy.
We were listening, we were watching the America's Cup, and Ernesto always said once the protocol will be all right, we'll be back.
We kick things off with Arno Sarafagis, principal helm for the team. Born on the shores of Lake Geneva and one of the world's leading fast-foiling sailboat helms. He's twice European Moth champion. He's twice won the Extreme Sailing Series with Alinghi, making them the most successful team on the then cutting-edge stadium racing circuit. And has a host of wins on GC32 and the exciting foiling TF35 circuit. In short, he's a man that likes to sail fast. Arno, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on and thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much, Shirley. Yeah, I'm really happy.
We're here in Barcelona. The team have been fully set up here for some time now. First off, just explain your role. What's your role within the Cup team?
So my role into the this America's Cup team, Alinghi Red Bull Racing, is mainly a sailor. I'm part of the three helmsmen that we have now. I'm a bit more, let's say I'm the lead helmsman at the moment, but nothing is granted. So we have an internal competition and the best will be driving the boat for the racing. So it's great to be able to compete against each other and learn from each other, especially every day. But at the moment, I'm the lead helmsman and skipper for now, but hopefully I can keep this role. We will see in the future. And hopefully the other two will push me really hard, so I need to raise my game. But outside of the sailing, I'm really involved into the design. It's either the boat or especially the sails, because I've been working in sail design for about 17 years now. So I'm really, part of that side of the boat as well, and in the past, yeah.
It helps in the modern day America's Cup to have that technical background, also.
Yeah, for sure, and I think it's in the past it's been really technical as well. It was maybe a bit less in 3D dimension as it sits now, but for sure to have a really good understanding of all the design aspect, CFD, and all this aspect and the new technology help a lot. And I think now, as the boat are really foiling on the 2 points, on the foil and the rudder, it's a new dimension. Since 2013, now they start to foil with the catamaran. But the background I have with the mod sailing as well, and the GC and all the other sailing we used to do on the lake, it helped a lot to learn this 75, yes.
It's your first major cup campaign. How are you feeling? Also, to be skippering not just a Swiss team, but a two-time winning team. You know, how exciting is that for Arno?
To be in this role leading this this big name Alinghi with the big legacy of 2003, 2007 and 2010, even if it was not the most successful campaign, but still a really big campaign. For me, it's I'm really proud of that. And there is some pressure from the legacy of the name, but actually I don't really feel the pressure because it's a new era. Now it's not anymore just Alinghi. It's now Alinghi, yeah, and Red Bull. We together create this new team, and with the trust of Ernesto and Mr. Matešić, that they create it and they want to have a new view on it, and give the opportunity to younger generation of sailor from Switzerland to grow and let's say write a new page of history. We still have some old boys on the boat from 2003, 2007, and 2010. Yves Dutre is the only one left, let's say, on board. But we still have Ernesto, Pierre-Yves Joran, Joao as a rigger, Nils Fry is now with us as a coach. So we have a really big, in many other, really big legacy from the past of Alinghi, and as well a lot of knowledge from other teams, from Team New Zealand, from American Magic, and they all together they might have done maybe 50 cup if you align all them. So it's a really good environment to be in, and they are really helpful. So we kind of feel really into it, and we don't feel that there is pressure on us. It's everything is made so we can just move forward and learn from their knowledge.
Just cast your mind back for us. I mean, can you remember when Alinghi won the cup? What do you remember about all of that?
Yeah. So in 2000, I remember the first time I really watched the America's Cup was in 2000 when Luna Rossa was in final against Team New Zealand. I remember that. So it's really funny because I think I watched the last race of that cup, and Dean was driving the boat, and now we are sailing on the same boat and sharing coffee and having jokes. So it's really, let's say 23 years ago, I couldn't have imagined that. And for me, it was, let's say, into another world, because it was no social media. It was something that was completely different than now. So it's really incredible. Then in 2003, I remember I was waking up every night. Many nights we woke up and nothing was happening on the TV. I had the chance to go for a week in New Zealand, but couldn't see any races. But I really remember the winning race of the America's Cup. I was in the Société Nautique, the Genève Yacht Club, and middle of the night, the club was fully packed with all the members, all the young sailors. We were there, and this atmosphere was incredible. It was like it was bigger than New Year party, and you start to really realize what happened when actually they came back with the cup in Geneva, and the whole city was fireworks, and I never saw that many people out in the street at night just to celebrate Alinghi. And from that day, I told myself, the first thing I want to do is I want to be able to join Alinghi at one stage in my career, my life. I was not thinking too much of the cup, let's say, but for me, the cup was, Alinghi was the cup. So I wanted to join that. And that was one of my first dream as a young sailor. I had the chance to achieve it in 2016. And since that day, every day I try to work on that dream and go to the next one. So the next one was to do the cup, and now we are here today. Yeah.
How big is the cup back home in Switzerland?
The cup is really big from the 2003. I think the people. I mean, they knew, some of the people knew it before, but now everyone don't know the name Alinghi. So now we try to change to make sure they know that our new name is not just Alinghi, but Alinghi Red Bull Racing. But it's crazy because you can go anywhere in the city in Geneva, and there is no day that you will not be able to see someone with either a cap or a jacket from the previous cup. So it's there in their daily life, and so it's really great that Ernesto made the decision to come back after so many years. I think he was waiting the right time to come back, and I'm glad he made the choice. Yeah,
that is very true. Every time I've been, particularly to Geneva, you always see someone with a 20-year-old Alinghi hat or a jacket. That is so true. Alinghi, as a team, were before, I have skipped a couple of cup cycles. It has been a while. I mean, how much catching up does the team have to do to get into competitive shape in the foiling monohulls?
I think Alingil lost track of the cup for many cycles. But I think, let's say, all the designer shore crew that we have never really left the cup cycle. Many went to Artemis, Team Zealand, Oracle, and many other Team Japan during the years, or Groupama. And so it's the technical side of the team never really left the cup. They've been working in it probably since 25, 30 years. So I will say on their side, they don't have too much catch up to do. It's more on the, let's say, the sailing side, because the sailing team, no one from us, from that the people will be on board, did the last five cup, except Yves, the train 2010. But now it's a new era with the foiling. We are not new about the foiling, because we've been sailing the GC, the TF, and many other boats on the lake. So we kind of have this, but not into the cup environment. So we have a lot of catch up to do, that's for sure. And we are the road ahead of us is really long, but we know that. And it's where maybe we have an advantage on the other, because we know how much catch up we need to do. And we are still in the learning phase, and we haven't touched the limit of what we can learn and improve. So at the moment, it's really hard, frustrating sometimes, but we still have a bit of time just to catch up the other one. Yeah.
You took delivery of Boat Zero midway through last year. And a quick reminder to our listeners, that's Team New Zealand's first AC75 from the previous campaign. As a new team, you were allowed in the water earlier than anyone else. Talk me through those early sales. What's the learning curve been like?
For sure, we have a really good boat, Boat Zero from Team New Zealand. It's one was our first choice on the first generation boat. For sure, we would have liked to have a boat number two from anyone else, almost. Let's say like that. But the feeling is, we have just before the first takeoff, we had into your mind, you can have a lot of imagination of how it's going to be like when the boat's going to come out of the water, the force, the balance, and everything. Because we did train a lot on the simulator to get let's say the physique of it. But when you are on the boat, start to accelerate 12 knots, 14 knots, 15 knots, and then you don't really know what to expect when it's going to come out of the water. And it's incredible, because the boat is big, it's noisy, it's kind of a quite brutal environment. And I remember the first time we actually got to takeoff speed, and we say, okay, we go for it. And suddenly there is a moment of silence. Nothing is happening for maybe a second. And then you realize, now it's not a navy boat anymore, because it's out on the water, and you feel like it's a dinghy, and you are with your helmet in your kind of bubble, because you hear the noise of the hydraulic valve and everything. But if no one talks to you, because on the comm, you kind of feel like you are by yourself on that big boat, going super fast, the pressure of the air on your face. It's almost like if you take the head out of the windows on the car on the highway. The speed of the apparent wind and all this is so powerful, and it's funny, because come out the first time, you say, you have that moment of joy for maybe 10 seconds, and then you come back to reality, because you haven't found the equilibrium between the trim, the foil, and tack, and you're back in the water. And the crash back in the water, it's a massive amount of water coming to your face. And then you go, okay, it's almost a wake-up call, and then okay, you start again, and then you go step by step. But that the first feeling was the best we had on the boat. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, it's a beast of a boat, isn't it? I mean, it can really bite. And I remember, I don't know if it was the first sail, but there was a dramatic capsize pretty early on.
Yes. So yeah. So the first flight came after our first. Let's say step back as the team, because we had the chance to get the boat earlier on the water compared to the other team. We were delayed a bit because it's the boat are so complicated, so it took a bit more time just to get it running, because we got the boat and it was an empty boat. The boat was complete, but there was no system inside, so we had to rebuild the whole electronic and everything inside the boat. So which was take longer than expected, but was really good for the team, because now, I mean, we are in the same stage as the other team, because we commissioned some racing boat already, so now we can really move on and we don't discover something for our new boat. So the first sailing day we had was unfortunately, we got hit by a storm. That made lost a few weeks of sailing, because we had some issue on the boat. After that, capsized. Luckily, we didn't have the sail, and that time was probably the best thing that could happen to us. But I think it made ourselves to as a team to grow much quicker. We might have gained maybe 6 months of team bonding, and kind of, it also put back everything in perspective, because the feeling we had, I mean, this, all the sailor on board, we were a new team. You come in this environment with so many people that got knowledge, background, experience, and thing, and you kind of, in the beginning, you never really know how much you need to take a decision, or you know, it's maybe because we were a bit shy, or just kind of looking and something hits on the first time that we actually go out with the boat of the harbor. So it just put everything back in perspective. And I think from that, it's probably the best thing that happened to us, that actually happened on the first day. So we just step up and grow really quickly from that day. And probably for the campaign, it was a step back at that stage, but now we probably would jump a few in one go, yeah.
You've got a lot of experience on fast foiling boats, of course. Multiple European Moth champion, multiple GC 32 series champion. I mean, you even stepped into Pete Burling's shoes on SailGP during his Olympic campaign. You know, how does this foiling monohull compare, though, to anything you've sailed before?
I think as you say, I had the chance to do many different kind of sailing. I almost had the chance to sail on all the sailing boats that came out, the F50, the GC, the TF, the MOS, and many other, the easy to fly, and so all this boat are different from each other, but they all are linked in one way. You just try to find the best relationship between them. You can learn from things on a mod that will be helpful sometime on the SC75, but the boats are really different. But all this small feeling that you can have while sailing on another boat, and I think mainly it was helped me the most, is sailing with different people, because I had the chance in 2 years ago to helm SailGP in New Zealand to replace Pete Burling, but that was with his crew that won the cup 2 months before. So it was really interesting to be in their sailing team and to see how they were working, and this environment was really interesting for me, and I learned a lot of things from them and from the way they were doing it. It was not really far from what I was expecting, but it was really funny. And the most funny part was, I always been more or less the youngest on board a boat, and with them I was the oldest. so which was quite different. But I remember the sailing team that were there and the shore team on the sail GP, they welcomed me with like open arm, and it was a really nice experience, the two race regatta I did with them. And then I think the catamaran, the F50, is, I will say, it's quite different than a 75, because the balance is always on 3 point on the with the two rudders and on the foils on the F50, and now the 75, it's only 2 points. It's a bit biased on the side, so there is a really big management of the leeway of the boat, and the balance is really tricky. It's funny because I always thought the boat was gonna have a lot of inertia. That it still have some inertia, but every small movement of the sail trimmer, a foil controller, and everything is reacting really quickly, and the boat is so sensible compared when you look at the side of the boat, size of the boat, the weight. Every little action from anyone is, you can really feel it on the helm, on the balance. So it's really nice, because you need to have a really good communication with your teammates, and it's almost a silent communication sometimes. It's where it's worked the best, because you don't need to talk to understand what the other one is doing and how to react. So now let's say in the beginning phase was quite tricky to get, because we all learned the boat. So it was really nice to have Dean some of the first sailing day, because we could see the way he was doing it, or looking for the balance and the trim, as Pietro Cibello as well. That was a lot on board with us in the beginning. Now he's came out of the boat to be in the chase boat, to have an outside view. And so now we can really push on the coaching from outside instead of from the inside. But Dean and Pietro gave us so many information that we could try and put on the table to make it work. It's not always easy to transfer an information and make it happen, because we all have a different way to do it. But at least we have different point of view, and as well from two different teams, and there is many ways to make it work. So we just need in our team to make the right way for us. Yeah.
I'm interested to know if you can sort of feel it, or are you relying on data and electronics? What's the balance between electronics and also just natural feel?
I will say you can feel almost everything on the boat. The only really tricky part to feel is the load, because it's push button, so you don't. It's the load are quite tricky to kind of get a scale on it if you don't look at the data. But anything else from the load, all the balance, the speed, and all this, you can really get the feel, and where the data is incredible, because number never lie. So if you have a really good feeling, but on the data maybe it's not the best, and it's where you kind of find some clue from the data to make to find the right feeling for the good performance. It's where it's really nice, because you can, if you just go by feeling, you will sail in a matter of comfort, and maybe that will not be the fastest. So with the data, you can really push and try to go to the limit to make sure you are taking the maximum performance out of the boat, even if it doesn't feel nice on the go. But then you change your feeling, and I think it's a good way to do it.
One thing I'm curious about, we saw in the last cup, Luna Rossa ran what at the time was a pretty unusual helm setup, with Francesco Bruni and Jimmy Spittle helming port and starboard on the boat. And if we look at the teams now, American Magic have Slingsby and Goodison, Team New Zealand, Pete Burling, but also Nathan Outeridge on the sailing team. You know, it seems to be the way forward. Is that something you're looking at here?
Good question. Now, I think for sure if when I remember when Luna Rossa came out with the two helmsmen, and then you kind of, in the first thing come to you, to my mind was, but why do they got two helmsmen? It will be so much easier to only have one. But when you look back at the last cup, the way they were using the boat, and it was really clever, actually. It was probably one of the clever thing that happened last time on the cup, on outside of the design thing, but it was one of the things that really came out. It's their two helmsman setup. They didn't need to run from one side to the other, lose track of the reference point. It's only Pietro Cibello was going from one side to the other. So kind of, I think it was a really clever move, and especially when you look at the pre-start and the way they were sailing the boat, they were, let's say, running around just to try to be on the right spot at the right place. But Luna Rossa didn't have to do that. They could just focus and push pressure on the other one. And it would have been nice to have more fight on the pre-start and things like that. Or because if they had to run from one side all the time to the other, Luna Rossa could have an even more advantage on the starting box than they had. So that was interesting. And I mean, for us at the moment, as you say, we are looking, I think all the team have two helmsmen, or maybe they have more, but it's because also you want to learn and not to put all your coins on one person, because otherwise you kind of stop the learning curve. Because if you only rely on one person, it's not going to work, and you need to improve. And especially now, let's say, with the AC40 program, that you need to have two helmsmen anyway, because you cannot switch side when you sail the boat in the rules. So, I mean, you can drive from leeward, but it's not going to be as efficient if you're to windward. So I think this trend is going forward. The boat will be different, I think, in the way they will be designed as well. And I will say, I don't think you will see anyone running around anymore. Or maybe if someone come with another idea, but yeah, I think it's gonna be more. It's gonna be closer and closer to what Luna Rossa were running in the past, I think.
You're a pivotal interface between the race team and the design team, of course. And one question I'm often asked is, how involved are Red Bull Racing with your design setup? We saw Christian Horner dialed into your team launch. He's team principal at Red Bull F1, of course. What's the relationship, if any, there between the sailing and the F1 team?
The relationship between Alinghi Red Bull Racing and I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, Oracle Red Bull Racing, the F1 team, is it's not limited to that, because on the technical side there is they have a lot of exchange with Airbat. It's a Red Bull advanced technology that they are next door to the F1 team in England, and they have an exchange with them on different topics of the design of the boat. They can go from aero, hydro, technical, and everything else. So there is a really a big link in between the two, and I think it's the really good thing that Red Bull is in the team, is because that we can actually, not only for the technical part, but for the athletes, the media and everything, it's a toolbox, if you want. We have access, and of the sailing team here in Barcelona has access of all the world of Red Bull, and they are all behind us as well and try to help, so we can really work on the on the mental preparation, the physical, and everything you could imagine from Red Bull world that put together for the athlete, they put it as well for to make it a successful campaign, because they're in it as much as Alinghi is. It's really the team is together. It's not two separate things. It's only one team. So it's we have access of everything, and there is back and forth conversation and exchanges.
What about from a racing perspective, Arno? Are there any areas where you can see you have to change your approach, your mindset? Sailing a boat like this, is there a different approach to racing, do you think?
I will say yes or no. I think it's really hard to imagine or to race this boat will be at the moment. It's going to be a bit more real when we will have the two AC40 train and do the pre-regatta and things like that. But the boat is not an easy boat to sail, that's for sure. You can't do everything with it. If that's where you need to have the best boat handling that you could imagine have to make sure you can be aggressive, be able to do all the maneuvers without touching the water, or at least coming back on the foil as soon as possible to make sure you can actually be alive and start racing. If you're not able to do that, you will not even be able to race. The other boat will just sail away. So there is there is two sides of it. There is either you really need to sail the boat well. You could be the best on the boat. You could do all the maneuvers and everything, and you don't need to know to race because you will be so good at boat handling. If your boat is fast, you will win the race. But I don't think that's going to happen. Every team will be really strong. Everything are clever. So all the boats will be fast and hopefully reliable. So we could have really great race. And now it's going to be more on how much you push and you risk on the sailing side, on the racing side. I think I don't come from a match race background. That's for sure not. Been more sailing stadium racing, 6-7 boat fleet. So there is always situation. As mainly, for sure, I was more in the last few years really, let's say we could say expert on the extreme sailing series, kind of sailing really tight course in the river and really small environment, which is really nice because now we have the boundary, so it's kind of similar to that, but it's one to one boat instead of fleet race. So sometimes we had really good fight, especially with against last few years with Phil Robertson and Adam Minoprio, where we had the most racing against each other. So it was kind of really nice boat to boat. But then sometimes you don't really care if you second, third, or fourth. It's just a matter of total of point at the end of the regatta. So now it's either you win or you lose. So it's a different approach, and I think we need to be probably taking more risk sometimes and be more aggressive. But I also think that, let's say, if you come from a match race background, sometimes my feeling is they just don't care about losing. Sometimes they just it's sometimes it's too much for them. A matter of death and life, and some you can really look at it, and sometimes you can feel that they're just gonna go for it because they just want to eat the bone and they didn't achieve it. So I think I might need to learn that a bit more, but I think it's good that we come from another background. Yeah.
What do you think of your fellow challengers? I mean, looking at the playing field, Ineos, Luna Rossa, and American Magic, all with big learnings from Auckland. And we don't know too much about the French team yet, but what are your thoughts on your competitors and the other challengers?
I had the chance to sail against all of them at one stage. And I think if you had to choose on a list of people and put them in teams, you will have not choose anyone else of, for out of them. So probably they are the best in the sailing world, and it will be interesting to see the combination of who are sailing with in the team. It's a bit locked now because of the nationality rules or residency and things like that. But I think all the pairs that are going to be on the water make a lot of sense. And I think everyone is really strong in all their aspects with different approach, let's say, and way of sailing. But I'm really looking forward to sail against all of them and try to learn how they work together. I have my own feeling on some of them and why some pairs were made like that together, because to improve or to change the way they were sailing when they were not in the same team. So I will see. I will see if I was right on it. And but it's gonna be is great. It's you all dream to be able to race against these guys at one stage, and we're into it. And we're just gonna go there, sell our race, and see what comes out. Yeah.
Just a final question, Arno. I sailed an Olympics here in Barcelona a long time ago, but I have spent a lot of time here, and it's great to be back. How are you liking the venue? You're the only cup team with AC 75 miles out there. You know, how is it shaping up as a cup venue?
Yeah, to be here in Barcelona with first team to be here since a year for some of the team members. It's great. It was tricky the first few weeks, coming from a small village on the lake in Switzerland, coming in a big city like this, and it's a lot of tourism. But it is great to be here. Now we feel at home. You can feel the interest of the people from Barcelona that are now understanding that we are here sailing and seeing the W Hotel coming red the night before we go out. We can get start to get recognized in the street with the team gears and say, oh, and we saw you sailing the other day, or in the shops and the restaurant. So we start to have the feeling that the city is really into it. And the good thing is that we are the only team here. If they can feel that we are the home team, for us it will be great. So if we can have the support of the city as a home team and Switzerland as well, will be amazing for us. And it's incredible how many different days we have here as a sailing condition as well. We have been through winters here. Didn't sail really in summer yet, but every day it's almost a different sea state condition, wind condition, and so there is so much thing to learn to be early compared to the other one. For sure, they will catch up really quickly. That's for sure. But I mean, we feel that we are in the right place at the right time.
Arno, hopefully the first of many appearances on the podcast. All the very best, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Roy.
As we've discussed, Alinghi Red Bull Racing come to AC 37 as one of the new teams for the next cup. New in that they've been absent for a while, and most importantly, missing the first iteration of a new class of cup boat in missing the last cup in Auckland. To find out how much of an issue that could be, I was keen to talk to the man that really runs things from a sailing perspective at Alinghi Red Bull Racing. As a new team, they were allowed to sail an AC 75 before any of the other established teams, and so bought Team New Zealand's first AC 75, which they have been sailing here in Barcelona. They have a lot to catch up on, but I was also keen to find out what it was about the way the cup has evolved that meant that team owner Ernesto Bertarelli wanted back in after over a decade away. Pierre-Yves, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us. And first things first, can you tell us your role within Alinghi Red Bull Racing?
Yeah, good morning. So I am one of the three co-general managers with Silvio Arrivabene, who is looking after the design and the techniques, Michel Odara from the business standpoint and all the finance. And I am looking at all the sports operation, which includes the sailing, the youth and the women's program, and the on-water support team.
It's a big job.
It's a big job, but as all the job and the position within the team, you know, all the people, lots of things to do and big responsibilities, and we have a busy schedule for sure.
You've been involved with the Alinghi team for, well, as long as the team's existed, I'm thinking. I mean, you were involved in the two wins in 2003 and 2007. You know, how exciting is it to be back on the hunt for the America's Cup?
Yeah, you are right. I mean, it's a while. I'm part of Alinghi team. I met Ernesto already 30 years ago. We started sailing together on the lake on a supercharged multi-hulls back mid-90s. And then I was, with the winning team in Auckland in 2003 and Valencia 2007. I was also on board the 2010 dog match. And after the dog match, I must admit, the defeat was quite deep and the pain was quite high. And it took time to recover from that. So we decided to stay away from the America's Cup for a while. We kept a very small team sailing on the D35, GC32, Extreme Sailing Series. So we kept, a core team together. But we were always very close. We were listening, we were watching the America's Cup, we were reading the protocols. And Ernesto always said, once the protocol will be all right, we'll be back. And he mentioned, a couple of years ago that America's Cup is a little bit like climbing the Everest. To be successful, you need a great weather forecast. And for us in the America's Cup, the weather forecast is a little bit the protocol. And this time, protocol seems to be fair. And we decided to come back. So we are super excited to be back in the Cup.
What did he like in the forecast for the Barcelona Cup that finally made him decide? Okay.
Well, first of all, the monohulls. I mean, we were a little bit dubitative when we first watched the boat, back in 2018-19. But in the end, it was fantastic race. I mean, the Kiwi, the New Zealander had a speed edge, but the boat were just delivering outstanding performance. And we love in Switzerland, we love speed, we love techniques, we love development. So that's one part. Also, the fact of, not knowing the venue, all the venue were fine. I mean, we were just fine to go back to Auckland or to move somewhere in Europe, as Switzerland was not an option for us. It was fairly easy to adapt ourselves to the new venue. So that was, and also, because we knew it's going to be a foiling, and in Switzerland we have great talents and great sailors with lots of feeling and expertise in foiling. Not much on the America's Cup, but on the foiling. And foiling, it's all about having a great feeling and to get the boat into the groove as quickly as possible.
The team, as you said, haven't been involved in the Cup since the Deed of Gift match back in 2010. How much catching up is there to do?
I must admit, it's a lot. There is a lot to catch. Obviously, on the sailing standpoint, we start from a blank sheet of paper. As I said before, these young boys and are super talented and we work hard on a daily basis. But America's Cup is not only a sailing game, it's also people, design, and most of the time the fastest boat finally win the race. So we have a super experienced design team. led by Marcelino Botti, Adolfo Carao. So they bring a huge expertise. We have very, very creative people within the design team. So they are bringing fresh ideas, thinking out of the box on a daily basis, and bringing these ideas on the table, which is very excited. But also, you have to manage all these ideas. That's also being successful in the Cup is how to manage priorities, how to manage the ideas, and to make them going through through the process. And the short team is very well experienced as well, led by a team, Hackett, and reliability is key. So having strong people down at the shed looking after the boat is also part of the program, because you need to go out on the water, but you need to trust on your boat, and you need to push your boat as hard as possible and trust on the people working on the boat. So I must say that we have a bunch of experience from the AEC 36 Cup, from the design and the shore, and we have lots of talent on the sport. So now we have to mix everything and work on that. We still have 18 months, but we know the clock is ticking.
What were you all thinking as the Cup went on in Auckland, presumably watching it, the AC-75 speeding around the Hauraki Gulf? What were you thinking? And, how hard has it been to be away for such a long time?
Yeah, that's so you're right. We were looking at the race, middle of the night or early in the morning. So we were impressed by these flying monohulls, because they start from scratch, new concept, totally blank sheet of paper, and they build up pretty strong boats. Obviously, there were lots of speed differences between the teams, but we also see that some teams managed to catch up during the Prada Cup and came back, for the final with some good speed improvement. The match racing went a little bit down compared to the previews, but I guess it's normal. Each time you introduce a new type of boat, the boat speed, the boat speed makes the big difference. But now we are in a second cycle, so we expect to have close boat speed between the teams, and the match racing skill will probably play a bigger role.
Many of the other challengers have AC-75 experience, design, build, and racing, of course. What does this team have? What are a Lingi Red Bull Racing strengths, do you think?
Yeah, we know that all the competitors has got probably more than 100 days on the AC-75 already. They already race with such a boat, so they know how the boat behaves in a tight duel. So we know that. That's why we work hard to catch up. As of today, we already sailed 50 or 51 days on the 75, plus 10 or 12 on the 40. We know it's not enough. Within Alinghi Red Bull Racing, obviously we talk about the people. I think we have very smart people, very creative people. They have we have very on each individual there is a big genius, and the goal is to have them working together, and it work fine. In addition to that, at Red Bull, we are working with Red Bull Advanced Technology, which is a part of the Formula One team. We're exchanging on a daily basis on different projects, which save us time. They bring also their knowledge, their vision, their expertise on different projects. I'm not talking about the marketing communication. It's obvious that in terms of activation, they are big and good. But on the athlete, we have a big support from the APC, which is the Athlete Performance Center from Red Bull in Austria, and that's very, very interesting to work with these people, because they are in the sport since 25 years. They are working on many projects, and they are supporting us not only on the cognitive, on the mental performance, but also on the physiologic and of sport. So So we have, you know, kind of great support within the family because it's a new company. Alinghi and Red Bull joined together. So it, and we have a daily support from that. And perhaps another strength is, you know, thinking fresh. Thinking fresh. In no way we want to copy paste what we did in 2003, 2007. Of course, we bring some expertise from that, but it's a different game. It's a different time. It's a different boat. It's different people. So we have to think out of the box, have a creative approach, and think fresh.
What's the hardest part of what you're trying to achieve, do you think? I mean, obviously, you're not a new team, but you've been away from the Cup for a long while. And of course, you know how to win it. So you know what it takes. What's the toughest challenge for the team right now?
Well, I think that the landing in Barcelona, you know, everything went very, very quick. The Team New Zealand and Ineos Team UK announced the venue last March. We were at that time all sitting in Switzerland in our offices in Écublan, Lausanne. And so the landing in Barcelona, going so quick into the process, being the first in town was for us key. It was a big move, and today we are glad to act as quickly as we did last year. To me, time management is one very, very key moment. We need to spend time on the water. We need to be very efficient on the water. The weather here is great. I mean, it's challenging sometimes, but we managed to get some really good. And also, because of the creative people we have, and they are all great, because they are bringing so many ideas on a daily basis, it's for me very difficult to choose. To make the priority, saying, okay, that's a smart idea, but we cannot afford to go that deep, or we don't have time to be successful, or so it's really a question of managing the time, managing the priorities, and make sure we go on the right path.
As you said, you're currently all alone out here in Barcelona, the Cup venue. The other teams are based elsewhere. How important is it for you, do you think, to be based here?
Being or staying in Switzerland was not an option for sure. So for us, it was obvious to move as quickly as possible, and we wanted to do one and only one move to the venue. Being somewhere else for 6 months was not an option. Also, obviously, sailing on the race course is great, but more than that, I mean, we have a team of 120 people. We have 15 different nationalities. It takes time to buy the atmosphere of a city. Living in Barcelona is not like living in Geneva or where I come from. So it takes time that the team member and the family, because family play a so important role in the Cup, feels well integrated, and in the team, but also in town.
You're out on the water every day. You can sail here. Currently sailing the AC75 that came from Team New Zealand, but zero. I mean, are you actually testing foil concepts and systems already, or is all the sailing to bring the team up to speed on the AC75?
Yeah, so we were lucky to buy this boat zero. We call that boat zero, which is a great boat. We have two different foil package, which is great in a sense, but there are some downside as well. As you can imagine, the boat doesn't react the same from one side to the other, which put lots of pressure on the flight controllers, on the driving group, to manage to get accurate numbers from port to starboard. As I said, the sailing team starts from a blank sheet of paper, so the learning curve is steep. We have introduced a couple of more helmsmen, a couple of flight controllers, so we are in a process to turn around and test different people at the different positions. So each time you bring in someone, you can expect that the performance goes down a little bit. But also it was so important and very important for Marcelino and Adolfo from the design office to collect feeling information data from the daily sailing. So both are super important. Now with the 4D in town, that's a great asset. These boats are cool, very, very easy to sail. Not easy on the sense of make them going fast, but it was pretty much a plug and play, so it was really, really cool. And I must admit, having the two boats, one is under maintenance, the other one can be out on the water, and so we keep running. And since then, we are sailing 4 days a week, which is great.
You've had Dean Barker helm from American Magic in the previous cup, and Pietro Sabello from Luna Rossa Prada Pirelli, the previous successful challenger, both out here coaching the team, both with lots of AC75 experience. How valuable has that been, and what sort of knowledge have they been passing on?
Yeah, these two people are fantastic people, not only due to their skills and victory list, but also as a person, as human. They are interacting very well with the group. They are exchanging with passion. They are giving advice without limit, because there is no competition at all. I mean, they are here to help, they are here to support, they are here to pass their knowledge. And having Pietro is with us full time since last year already, and Dean also part time. It's a great value. And more than that, for Arno, for Nico, for the driving group, for all the sailors, it's very important, because each time they have a doubt, each time they have a question, each time they don't feel great, they can rely or they can on Pietro and Dean. And we also have Brad and Hans Peter, in that group of mentor, or call that how we want, but which are extremely talented sailors, and with a huge background on match racing, on how to perform the day, etc. So the coaching, the support team is very well organized. So we have Niels Frey, head of coach, coordinating all these people and bringing the right guy at the right time to support the sailors.
For this cup, of course, each team are allowed to build one new boat. We're at about 500 days to the first actual cup match. So what's the time frame? When do you launch your own AC75?
So it's always the same conflict. If you ask the sailors, they want to have their racing yachts before Christmas to have enough time to sail with and to get used to it. And if you have Marcelino, he would like to have more time to think about smart ideas and to deliver the boat next September. So we have to play in between these two teams. So it's going to be an average. So we expect to have our boat boat one ready for middle of next year. So probably because we're going to have a pre-regatta here in Barcelona early in the summer. So that would be the latest deadline to get the boat up and running on an efficient way here in Barcelona.
We talk about the speed of these foiling monohulls, racing at over 50 knots, closing speeds at over 100 knots. But actually, Pierre-Yves, to you, these are pretty low numbers, aren't they? I'm just going to digress a little before you leave us. Just tell our listeners what you used to get up to in your youth.
Yeah. Well, on the water, obviously, 50 knots, 100 kilometers an hour is just phenomenal. It's a great experience. And I'm sitting on the chase boat, and and trying to catch up with this boat sailing 38-39 knots upwind against the wave is really a sport himself. But before, you know, jumping in the America's Cup, I was part of the Swiss ski team, and I represented Switzerland in the Olympic Games back in 1992. And I was doing speed skiing. And speed skiing, it's easy to understand. So you are up on the mountain and you have to ski down as quickly as possible. And they measure your speed on a 100 meters portion. So I reached 225 kilometers an hour 30 years ago. But you know, that's funny because yesterday they beat the new world record and now they are up to 255. So it's still improving. But there are some comparison. You know, it's all about aerodynamics. It's all about being good in your head and be ready to deliver, and you have to play with the air, and sailing is obviously also playing with the air, aero, with the sails, the mast, the hull. So there are a big comparison.
I can't imagine going down the mountain at over 200 kilometers an hour. You're crazy.
Used to be.
Speed skiing was a demonstration sport, wasn't it, in the 1992 Winter Olympics? It didn't stick, possibly a little bit too dangerous, I'm thinking. But skiing's loss is sailing's gain. Pierre-Yves, thank you so much for your time and all the very best.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Pierre-Yves Jorand, general manager of the sports team at Alinghi Red Bull Racing and one-time Olympic downhill speed skier. There's not much that gets past the research team here on this podcast. To Pierre-Yves, to Arno and all the guys at Alinghi Red Bull Racing in Barcelona, many, many thanks for letting us take a glimpse inside the team. A big thanks especially to Sophia and the comms team for all their help. And to the Real Club Nautico in Barcelona, a big thank you for the interview space and their hospitality. Many thanks. Well, if you like what we're doing on the podcast and you're loving your monthly fix of sailing chat, get online and head over to buymeacoffee.com/sailingpodcast. It means a lot. So if you haven't already done so, then please give it a try. As usual, the regular thanks to the talented Tim at Vertigo Films for producing the podcast every month. I may be the helm of this particular outfit, but he's very much the wing trimmer and flight controller. So Tim, as ever, great job. Thank you. And so that's it for part one. Make sure to give part two a listen. There's plenty more chat from the guys at Alinghi Red Bull Racing. Until next time, thank you so much for your company. Have fun on the water and sail safe, everyone.
This is Castle One. Race officer speaking.
Leroy, he's on boundary up ahead, 35 seconds out.
A bit lower and faster here.
Ho, ho, ho. That's a good one, Jimmy.
Still gaining on the line right there. Gaining on the line right
there. We're looking at 10.5 and 42. Matching him on the boundary, yeah. Copy.
Castle One standing by. Out.